Welcome to a bonus episode of ESC 101, a Eurovision history podcast. In the previous episode, we explored the theme of outer space in the Eurovision Song Contest. Part of that episode featured the chat I had with Jack Eaton and Justin MacArthur of the Mates in Space podcast, where I asked for their perspective on the logistics of hosting Eurovision on the moon in the year 2100, and got their reactions to some Eurovision entries with outer space theming. The original session lasted for almost an hour and a half, and I decided to cut part of the session simply due to time. However, in this bonus episode of ESC 101, I am releasing the extended cut of that session, which includes additional material, featuring their reactions to astronauts shown in the 2009 and 2022 contests, as well as their reaction to a Eurovision entry from the 2010s. If you have already listened to episode 21 and would just like to listen to the bonus content, you can skip ahead to around the 46 and a half minute mark. And for those of you who haven't yet listened to episode 21, get ready for an hour and 20 minutes of both insightful and chaotic reactions to Eurovision in space. This is ESC 101 featuring Mates in Space. This is ESC 101 podcast, transmitting a communications link to the P's inner network. Mates in Space, do you read me?
Hello, this is Mates in Space, do you copy?
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello, hello.
Bonjour, mon ami. Oui, oui. Oh, I'm speaking French now. Oh, hello. Hello, I'm here. I hear you loud and clear. In English, I promise.
Sehr gut.
Yes, I copy. Hello, Mates in Space. I am hearing you loud and clear. Welcome to ESC 101 podcast. For those of you who may not be familiar with your work, could you introduce yourselves, tell us about Mates in Space, and reveal the secret to your creative genius, because I've got to know.
I would like to make it all about me, and you two are just also there.
Oh, well, sorry. We always do. Do you want me to kick off, Jack?
Oui, oui.
Thank you very much for having us on ESC 101. It's a pleasure to be here in Canada. I appreciate you flying us out for the opportunity to come on this podcast. It's been obviously a long flight, but worth it. And then immediately turn around and fly back to Australia.
I hope you're used to the cold.
Oh, yes. Well, I've been preparing. I actually spent last night watching your national sport of Crokinole.
What?
Oh my goodness, you don't know Crokinole? Are you a real Canadian?
Even the Canadian doesn't know what you're talking about.
It's the board game version of curling.
Oh,
curling. Okay, see, I know what curling is. You're using your weird Australian lingo. Your accent confuses me.
Yeah, that's okay. Crokinole sounds like it should be an Australian word more than a Canadian word anyway, so I'll forgive you.
Absolutely does. Anyway, I'm Jack. Is everyone knows Jack. Jack is the center of most people's universe. And I don't know how else to introduce me except to say here's Justin as well, watching Crokinole.
Hello.
Thank you so much for having us.
My name is Justin and I am a co-host of the Mates in Space podcast. My job is to wrangle Jack.
My job is to be wrangled.
I'll remind our listeners that this Jack is the same Jack Eaton that I promote at least once a month on the Eurovision Travel Guide series, former co-host of the Deuce Bomb podcast and one half to one third of the Eurovision Forever project.
Yeah, that's true. I am one third.
So yes, this is the same Jack Eaton that I get to talk about all the time. So yeah, welcome to the two of you.
Don't crowd me. Stop. Don't. I'm not giving autographs. Don't crowd me. I can't. It's too much. It's too much. Stop. Just calm down.
I'll give you however many autographs you want.
That would be very appreciated. So tell us about Mates in Space. So what exactly is Mates in Space?
Sure. So Mates in Space is the show about how we're going to get to space without taking all of Earth's bull honky with us. I'm self-censoring here. We are a space podcast, ostensibly, although we very much bend the rules of that and head up to space on our own terms, as all of us should be doing. We end up being a show about society and culture and aliens and UFOs, much more than we ever really talk about the things other space podcasts talk about.
We've talked about a lot of pop culture. A lot of pop culture.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's very hard to have a... even if it was going to be a standard space podcast, putting you in as co-host means that we're just going to talk about pop culture the whole time anyway.
I've done a Katharine Hepburn impression more times than I can count on our space podcast. I really have.
My favorite impression of yours is Jennifer Coolidge when you did Space Reagan. And it was like, wow.
Oh, that's the other one I do quite a bit.
Wow. There's so many lasers up here. It's crazy.
She likes to show off everyone.
We have a fourth person on the call. It's Jennifer Coolidge.
Yes. Yeah, this is our co-host Jennifer Coolidge.
Yeah, so there's three of us. Jennifer not always there.
That would be fantastic. There's three of us and then Jennifer Coolidge. Yeah, there we go. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your expertise in space exploration and, of course, your opinions on some of the Eurovision entries that we're going to be covering this week.
I wouldn't say expertise in space. I am skilled with Google.
Yes, he can Google anything. Like, he just knows how to do it.
Just name a thing. Name any phrase I can type it into Google.
Oh my God. Janet Reno Dance Party SNL 1998.
Okay, I can't type that one into Google, but you've caught me out on that one. It's okay. I'm sure there's others.
It's the one phrase you can't Google.
What? Why can't you Google that one?
Unfortunately, I don't have an L on my keyboard. So if you can do any other 25 letters.
You could still do Janet Reno Dance Party Saturday Night 1998.
Yeah, there you go. So I have just explained to our listeners a brief history of space exploration, which was kind of not really long. It was really bad. You two would have done a much better job, but you know, I'm not going to ask you to do the whole episode because that'll be a little bit too lazy on my part. So we'll leave it there. And we just covered four Eurovision entries that have outer space themes, kind of, sort of. I know a few of them definitely do, but you know, Eurovision doesn't exactly have every single topic under the sun. I mean, at this point, it probably does, but back in the 50s and 60s, you know, not so much. So I'd like to take a break from looking at the entries and pivot towards a more hypothetical scenario and get your expert opinion on the feasibility of it. Because I know that you guys have explored, you know, different types of space things and talking about like lasers and the moon and the stars and all the other space stuff. Again, I'm not a scientist, so this is, again, relying heavily on the two of you.
That's okay.
Here's a scenario, and I would love to get your opinion on it. So let's assume by the year 2100, humans have successfully colonized the moon. The people of the moon love watching the Eurovision Song Contest and have managed to convince the executive supervisor to allow the moon to enter the contest, and they have been doing so for several years. The moon eventually ends up winning the Eurovision Song Contest, and the EBU decides that it would be great PR to forego tradition and the rules and host the following contest on the moon. Assuming that transporting people and equipment will be covered and financially affordable, and an area on the moon would be designated for an arena, what would the Eurovision Song Contest look like on the moon?
Oh,
I mean, it's a great question.
It is a good question. It would look insane.
I feel like I should kick off my answer to this one by issuing a bit of a mea culpa, because you asked a similar question on our show during our listener Q&A section late last year, and I kind of took this as, great, this is my day off. Jack can answer what Eurovision on the moon sounds like. And I didn't know you were looking for such a thorough logistical explanation, but I'm so appreciative of the opportunity to make amends.
I needed a part two to that because we just need more. We need more Eurovision content on Mates in Space.
Absolutely. So this is a spiritual successor to that conversation. But let's talk about people on the moon in the year 2100, because I love that you've included the detail of the year. Currently in 2024, people live in space in just one place, which is the International Space Station, and they're generally there for less than a year at a time, the only exception being an astronaut called Frank Rubio, who we talked about on our show back in September last year. Rubio spent a record 371 days on the ISS. So when I picture a moon colony, it's only 3 days to travel to the moon. It's not that long, but I'm imagining a population that's growing every year. A lot of migrant workers. Liverpool, the host of Eurovision in 2023, is not a terrible benchmark for a moon colony. So, of course, space Liverpool won't be as big as Earth Liverpool, but like as an important outpost for space nations like the ISS is today, they'll have access to all the resources. So this is going to be as magnificent a Eurovision as we can have on the moon. How are you feeling about this so far, Jack?
Yeah, I think you've put in a lot more research than I did, because I'm ready to swoop in about the actual contest itself. Yeah, I love the whole algorithm. Not algorithm, that's not the right word.
Vision? I don't know. What do you want to?
Yeah, let's cover that.
Okay, well, allow me to paint a picture for you, a beautiful space picture on the moon for what a lunar base will look like.
Sorry, did you say Waterlooner base will look like? It's now called the Waterlooner base.
For Waterlooner base will look like, that's exceptional. We'll take it. So all ideas for the Waterlooner base are a mix of science and science fiction, because obviously we haven't built on the moon. A lot of the research that's happening now is looking into lunar regolith and, moon rocks, I should say. I keep saying regolith on our show, and we have to ask for a definition every time. So some researchers suggest that there might just be a series of small self-contained pods. They're low to the ground, they're connected by tunnels, they're not very flashy. In those early days, the pods are built partially from spacecraft taking people to the moon, so the lunar landers themselves. And then they are covered in about half a meter of dirt, lunar dirt, to protect from the radiation of the sun. So we are very much in the dark, but we've got a lot of artificial light that's going to come from fusion reactors that use helium-3. I'm sure this is all what you wanted in your explanation of what Eurovision would look like.
I mean, I asked for scientific and I'm just going along. It's like, yep,
Yeah, you asked for more info. This is, yeah, be careful.
You're getting scientific. Okay, I've bored you stiff. I've bored you completely.
I'm not bored. I'm just confused over all the words you're saying. It's so foreign and non-understandable.
I'm always confused. I don't even know what he's talking about. And I'm his co-host. I'm bored. If it helps, I'm bored.
Okay, I know Jack's getting bored because I can see his eyes glazing over. I can feel the energy leaving the room.
No, the energy's here. It's just...
Oh, okay. It's just Jack's gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's weird. You've got these pods that are covered in a layer of dirt, but they're all artificially lit because the sunlight's not getting in. So it looks very like neon. You've got a lot of...
Just like my background.
Exactly like your background, which is Eurovision what year?
In Lisbon 2018. So I attended Lisbon, and so this was me taking a picture in the arena. I was like, ooh, this is like a very galactic-y kind of color scheme. So I figured, why not?
Oh, fantastic. It's very on brand for our podcast as well. So, and this brings us neatly to our Space Eurovision arena, which I know is what you're asking about. There's been a recent proposal that if you were to have any big building on the moon, what you could do is put it inside a giant cone that is spinning to simulate Earth's gravity. So the idea is the speed at which it spins, the centrifugal, I can't remember which, one of those two forces is going to simulate gravity by having it spin. This was recently suggested by Japanese researchers from the Kyoto University and the Kojima Corporation. I do have notes for this episode. I'm not just recalling that.
He has so many notes.
And of course, the building will be regularly restocked with organic, locally sourced oxygen, lovingly extracted from the moon rocks. And it'll be supplemented by moss and lichen grown on the walls. So you've got like neon mixed with moss is your framework for your environment.
That actually sounds really cool.
It's rad as hell.
I'm not going to lie. Like, thinking of that as a concept for the Eurovision stage, I'm thinking, like, if you have this, like, rotating thing, you can have, like, cameras on the walls. You could, like, have, like, a 360 view.
Yeah.
So that you don't have to worry about having, like, people running up to the stage and doing that, you know, that rotation thing.
Yeah.
Because there's far too many times where I see the cameraman in the shot and I'm just like, no, you're not supposed to be there. Go away. But instead, you just have it in the arena. The arena is the camera.
Absolutely. Yeah. So... the whole thing is spinning. So in order to have a shot that rotates, all you need to do is find a way to make that camera stay still. So if you were to just have a drone hover in the same spot in the air.
Which I'm sure we'd be figured out by 2100.
I'm hoping we can figure out how to have a stationary camera by the year 2100. I've not found one yet, but we'll figure it out by then, I'm sure. But yeah, so the Eurovision Song Contest, I feel like it's got a lot of elements of modern Eurovision. Jack, you can probably speak to this a bit more. but there's a lot to go off there in terms of like visual aesthetic that I'm sure will come up, if not in the entries themselves, in the kind of touristy cards that sit between each entry in the live broadcast that are like, come to the moon, we've got lichen.
Come to the moon, we have organic oxygen.
Organic. Fresh from the farm.
I think, you know what, there is a certain type of people that would go for that.
Absolutely. Jack, you're just looking perturbed, but non-verbally, which is not so good for podcast.
Yeah. One, I did just wake up. Two, I'm a little bit worried that you two are so excited about space moss at Eurovision.
Okay. Well, there's neon.
We do focus on the moss, but to a lesser extent than you guys seem to be at this exact point in the conversation. I feel like you're sort of losing the whole gay bit of Eurovision where we don't focus on the moss so much.
Are you worried that I'm making the conversation too heterosexual?
I am worried that we're straightening out a little too much.
So does moss have sexuality?
Oh, that's a question. That's a question for someone smarter than me.
If only, unfortunately, I can't Google lichen because I do not have an L on my keyboard.
You can Google moss. You can Google moss.
Sadly, I cannot type Google into my computer because I don't have an L.
Yeah, there you go. There's no L.
Checkmate.
So, okay. So from Jack's perspective then, on the moon, what would the Eurovision stage do you think would look like? Do you think we would go with a nature theme where we would actually have like moss and grass and actual nature on like the no, you're saying no nature?
No.
Jack's vetoing this. Jack is the executive supervisor, unfortunately.
I am. Unfortunately, it is me. I'm still going at 108 years old.
You'd be better than the current one.
Oh, don't. We'll get into that later. That's fine. I feel like if you go to the moon, you don't want to make it look like Earth, right? With all of your plants and stuff. We can do that here. You want to like lean into like the zero gravity. Like you want to be, you know, like you can have six people on stage and they can all float, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's going to be like the coolest part of it. I feel like you should lean into the mooniness of it. How many times are you broadcasting Eurovision from the moon? It depends how good they are. I understand that's probably not going to help when you have an audience. You don't want them floating the whole time.
Can you make it so that it's just the stage that's zero gravity and the audience has gravity?
Maybe you're asking the wrong person, Justin.
So, okay, we've got our cone that's spinning. Maybe the cone is inside an arena that is around the outside of the cone. Is that or the cone has a platform? The cone has a platform in the middle that stays still.
The cone could be the stage. And have like, it could be like see-through. So you like see through the cone. It would just be like a general.
Yeah.
So that you would, or can we have a reverse cone?
Yeah. So the audience is in the cone. So the audience is staying still and sitting down.
Yeah.
Then in the middle, you have a cylinder, which is the stage, which is not being anchored down where people are floating.
Oh, and then the stage would be right.
Yeah. So this is good. I like this. We're designing, people from the Kojima Corporation and the Kyoto University, tune in because we have some great designs for how you have a arena setting in the middle of your water lunar base.
Patent pending.
And the European Broadcasting Union, take our idea because I'll be dead by the time you implement it. But
I mean, I've started a podcasting corporation so that I can harvest the youth of all the people around me. So I will still be around in the year 2100.
Unfortunately, it's true.
You're the reason why I'm aging so quickly.
That's what it is. I've extracted. Mm-hmm. No, this is getting very close to like, it's getting very close to QAnon. I don't want to quite head in that direction in this episode. We're only just meeting. We'll save that for like second or third episode that we chat.
Personally, I'm going the hocus pocus method of stealing children and then just inhaling their youth. Like I'm pulling a real Bette Midler.
No, that's worse.
Is it?
You understand how that's worse, right?
No, but it's based in Disney, so it's fine. It's not weird. It's not weird if Disney do it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's weird if Hillary Clinton does it. It's not so weird if Bette Midler does it.
It's awesome that way.
It's fun for the whole family. Did you have like a second question that you wanted to ask us, Alex? Because Otherwise, we'll stay on this for hours.
Let's shift towards another space-related question before we dive too deeply into American politics. Just letting everybody know, none of us are American, so let's just leave it on the table. So on this hypothetical scenario, people are living on the moon and the base is established and yada yada, and they're big Eurovision fans. How difficult is it to actually transmit the Eurovision Song Contest to televisions and computers on the moon, assuming that electrical infrastructure and broadcast towers are constructed on the moon? Again, the underlying question, is there cell phone service on the moon? Is there like radio broadcasting service on the moon? Can I get like cable and HBO on the moon?
Okay, so in terms of transmitting shows to the moon, we already transmit a lot of data via satellites. That's how we're receiving TV shows. It's how we're on this call. Sorry to break the kayfabe of you having flown us to Canada.
You're just in a different room. It's fine.
Exactly, exactly. It's relatively trivial to transmit a TV show to the moon. I mean, in 1969, obviously, we received live footage from the Apollo mission as it touched down.
See, I didn't know about that. Was that actually live, or was that like a pre-recorded they then transmitted then put on TV, or that was actually live?
That was live, and because of where the moon was relative to the rest of the world, that was actually relayed from a radar dish in Australia. So this is like a big Australian claim to fame in space.
The dish. We made a movie about it.
We made a film starring Sam Neill, our favorite not really Australian.
That's incredible, actually. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's a big, like, in terms of Australia's space pride, the intricacies of the live broadcast of the Apollo mission are, like, that's very much our domain. Sending a message from Earth to the moon and back only adds a delay of about 2.5 seconds. So when it comes to the Eurovision vote, you'll probably hear Hello Moon Base calling with less lag than you get from a lot of countries anyway. Like, there's a lot of nations that won't respond as quickly as the moon base.
It's about 6.5 times faster than the link to Moldova every year.
Yeah, exactly. As for phone service, so you've kind of, there's internet broadcast and TV broadcast. There's also the question of cell phone networks. There isn't a cell phone network on the moon yet, but there probably will be by the end of 2024. So back in 2022, NASA announced a partnership with Nokia to set up a 4G network ahead of the Artemis flyby, which is going to happen next year, 2025. We've talked about that on our show, so that the astronauts are going to do basically a lap of the moon and come back. And by that point, the hope is that there will be a cell phone network locally on the moon. Which is, I don't know how useful that is, having a, like, can they text each other from opposite sides of the moon? I don't know if that helps.
They could televote for Eurovision if they're on a space mission and the Eurovision Song Contest is on. It's like, I forgot to vote. I need to vote for San Marino. Let's hurry up. Let's go, go, go.
Oh, you and San Marino, I swear.
I have to throw it in there. I have to.
I know. You're only human.
Just like you in Sweden.
Well, I'm not biased. I'm just...
You have a flag right behind you.
You do, in fact, have a Swedish flag over your shoulder.
I also have one on the wall next to me, but a really big one. But yes, carry on. I've lost that argument, haven't I?
You've also got an Australian flag, and in the corner of the Australian flag, a UK flag. So you're representing a lot of nations.
Don't get me started on that bit, but yes, that's true.
So presumably they'll be able to televote if they're there. They're traveling for 3 days and then 3 days back. So within the 6 days, if the Eurovision Song Contest in 2025 coincides with that, hopefully we can have some televotes from the moon.
Wouldn't that be so cool?
That would be actually an interesting question, because I guess it's like, because we have a rest of the world vote, but the moon's not part of the world. It's its own celestial body.
That's true. So rest of the world, we either need to expand that to rest of the the galaxy, the rest of the universe.
Solar system.
Well, let's not open it up to rest of the solar system, because that is purely setting us up to have to, when we inevitably find alien life a couple of galaxies away, then have to go, oh, okay, rest of the universe. Geez.
Do we want people from Sigma 5 voting at the Eurovision Song Contest?
Kang and Kodos televoting.
I think this is the vision for Europe that was initially mentioned. at the inception of the competition, Europe now includes Australia. Why can't it include the moon? Why can't it include Sigil 5 or whatever?
That's the thing I was going to say, though. It's already annoying enough when you watch Eurovision and they go, good evening, Europe. Good morning, Australia. And we're like, we get it. We get it. Like, it's morning here. Can you imagine what they're going to say on the moon? They're going to be like, good evening, Europe.
Good afternoon. They only have one more.
I mean, but like every country is going to want to say it the first time. They're going to do so many memes about it. Someone will be wearing like a moon mask. Someone will be like, oh, look, I can see you.
I mean, like as a Canadian, I always have to say like, good evening, Europe. Good morning, Australia. Good afternoon, Canada. Like, because Eurovision's broadcast in like the middle of the afternoon for us.
Yeah. Oh, you're so lucky. God, I'm so sick of getting up at 3 a.m.
But it's the greatest show on earth.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I would actually have seen a Eurovision recently had that being the case.
I apologize. What? People listening on the podcast cannot see my facial expression. It is of utter shock and disbelief. And
Jack's the voice of Eurovision and I'm the voice of space. We have, look, I like sub Eurovision songs. I must admit I'm not a Eurovision expert. Can I redeem myself momentarily?
Yes.
Jack has sent me the Croatian
almost entry,
or a potential Croatian entry, and I love it. I will, if that makes it into Eurovision, I'm watching the whole thing. My previous favorite entry in Eurovision was, of course, Wolves of the Sea by Latvia in 2008. So I have a steeped history. I'm getting booted from the podcast, aren't I?
So if I asked you to name every single winner in yearly order, would you be able to do it?
Oh, certainly, with Jack's help. I could definitely do that with Jack's help.
I don't even know if he knows who won last year.
Sweden, no.
Okay.
You're fine.
Good. No, yeah, you're good. You're good.
I've met you before, Jack. This isn't up.
I did not shut up about that one. Look at the flag. Look at the flag, baby.
At the shocking revelation of Justin's non-watching of Eurovision, I think we need to bring Justin up to speed and bring in some Eurovision entries to take a look at, because I think this lack of Eurovision knowledge is disturbing.
This is why I need a 101. I need to be brought up to speed on Eurovision.
This is why the podcast exists, is to teach Eurovision history.
Exactly. I'm your target audience.
So the first entry that we're going to be taking a look at is technically not a Eurovision entry. I know people are going to be like, but let me rant.
Is that what they're going to be like?
Probably.
They're going to be like, bah, 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 bah. That's exactly. Good impression of your listeners.
The first entry is from Germany in the year 1996. Now, I know that Eurovision history fans out there are going to scream at me, oh, Germany didn't participate in 1996. They didn't make it past the pre-qualification round. The EBU doesn't count 1996 in Germany's participation record.
I've always been saying that.
Well, the EBU doesn't do a lot of things like pick one winner in 1969 or adequately punish countries that clearly don't follow the rules. And they certainly don't make unique slogans anymore. So as far as the EBU is concerned, not counting Germany's 1996 participation, I say filtered word to that nonsense. Germany participated in 1996, an entry was created and performed. It just didn't make it to the grand final that year. The pre-qualification round is a semi-final, and I will take that argument with me to the grave.
I count it.
I stand by you. As a long-time consumer of Eurovision, as a person that has been...
That's a weird thing to take to the grave.
I absolutely stand by you. I don't, you know...
You're not going to argue that one with me, thank you, because otherwise I'd have to bring out the gloves.
You'd have to bring out any amount of information and immediately defeat me.
There you go. The German entry for 1996 is called Planet of Blue. I wish it would have been in German, because then I could have offended German people with my terrible German skills, but you are saved today.
I'll do it. I'll ruin it.
No, please don't.
I'll ruin it. I'll ruin any language. I'm so good at it.
He really is.
No, it's fine, Jack. Thank you. It's okay.
All right. But if you need me for Cantonese, I'm available.
Here is Planet of Blues sung by Leon.
Irgendwann macht's den großen Knall.
So despite the English title, the song is in German, and I do have the translated lyrics available. The translated lyrics read, "Today I'm dashing up to space. Beam me up with a big bang, and the countdown's on. The countdown's on. Walking around weightlessly, wanting to see you from above. You're wonderful. Planet of blue, I love you." There's a lot of repeated lyrics about countdowns and loving the planet blue, but that's basically the gist of the lyrics. What are your thoughts on this entry?
Well, I mean, obviously the lyrics are delightfully nonsense. Beam me up with a big bang is, what's that, Star Trek combined with the inception of that? Like, what is that as a phrase? But I kind of have an unstated, well, it's sort of an unstated rule. I'm going to state it now as a science communicator that my job isn't just to ruin people's days by saying your lyrics are bad. Like, I'm not the Neil deGrasse Tyson tweeting every New Year's. Actually, New Year isn't of any cosmological significance, you know. That said, I mean, I just love the Planet of Blue bit of it. And I can talk about that in a sec, but I feel like I've not let Jack talk much. So, Jack.
I'm still mad this didn't make Eurovision. Like, it did. That was Eurovision. If you have a selection of all the countries together to see who makes the final, you basically have a semi-final. That makes it Eurovision. Germany was at every Eurovision. I totally agree with you, Alexander, 110%. I don't know how this didn't get through. It is so camp. I think it was ahead of its time. I think if you'd put this in, like, 2001, guaranteed top 10 result. Even though it's a bit, I mean, it's not the best song ever written, but it's got everything, right? He's got, like, the studded jacket thingy. Oh, I just, yeah.
But it sounds so 90s though. Like, it sounds to me like it's pure 90s techno. Like, this fits in the 1990s.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, Eurovision's always been behind the times, sort of, a little bit. Not anymore, but it was.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as I'm aware, the executive supervisor at the time was the one who replaced Frank Neuf, which Frank Neuf was like, he put up with a lot of nonsense. He was a fantastic executive supervisor. And his successor, it was probably all like, oh, I'm just going to like put this in and see if it works. And I think Germany was like just on the edge. Like, it just missed qualification, if I remember my history correctly. And actually, funny enough, when I was looking through the history of other relegations, Germany also almost didn't make it. I think it was in 98 because Italy withdrew. And Italy is like, well, we don't want to go in. And then Germany ended up taking their spot. I think it was 1998. Editing me, if that's not correct, then we'll fix that. So that's, I'll make sure I'm informational.
Well, I mean, I've heard a compelling argument that Germany was at Eurovision in 1996.
Just to pull Justin in, the 96 Germany non-qualification is super controversial because it's the only Eurovision ever where Germany was not in the final. Like, Germany is the only country to have attempted to enter every single Eurovision, and the only time they didn't make it was 96. And so everyone's kind of pissed about it, because then we could have had one country that's been to every single Eurovision without fail.
I'm convinced.
They were, but officially they weren't.
I'm convinced, and I definitely think this, as you're saying, this feels very 90s, very techno. It feels, you know, if I had to, if you challenge me to name which international song contest this had been entered into, I would say Eurovision without a beat, obviously. So it's, I mean, it's a Eurovision song, even if it's only in spirit. My favorite bit, as I kind of hinted at earlier, is the Planet of Blue itself, because that actually is something that has a lot of connection to space beyond just the dashing up to space that he's doing at the top of the song. The idea of Earth as a blue planet is really only something that's been around for a century as like the mainstream interpretation of Earth. Because, of course, we don't live on the blue bit. We live on the green bit or the brown bit. So there's been a conception for centuries and centuries and centuries that Earth is a brown planet or a green planet. Then in the 1960s and 70s, NASA went up and took these photos looking back at Earth of a blue planet. I've actually got one behind me in my Zoom background.
Ah,
it's very nice.
Beautiful.
It's fantastic. And in particular, there's this famous photo from the year 1990 called the Pale Blue Dot, which looks back on Earth from 6 billion kilometers away. So they, at the request of astronomer and science communicator Carl Sagan, they turned Voyager around and pointed the cameras back at Earth, and it's this tiny blue speck in the middle of everything else. In 1994, Carl Sagan calls it a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. And I like to think that Leon was drawing on Carl Sagan there with Planet of Blue. Like, Leon's lyrics are all around what Carl said in his famous Pale Blue Dot speech. So this is, I mean, it's both a Eurovision song and a great space song. I really, as much as the countdown's on, doesn't make any sense. Walking around weightlessly, wanting to see you from above.
Well, it's the countdown on because it's the rocket ship that he's going to go up and see the Earth. I mean, this song really, to me, talks about the beauty of seeing Earth from above. I mean, it's talking about wanting to dash up to space to beam me up with a big bang, and the countdown's on for the time that I'm able to do that, and being able to see the wonderful planet Earth. And it's very, it almost feels like it's from the 1960s and 70s in terms of the messaging. So talking about how we want to see the beauty of Earth from space. I mean, we're making a technological leap from basically flying in a rickety flying machine to space shuttles in like the span of 50 years.
Right.
And to have this song in the 90s with a sort of techno beat. I mean, it's very high energy. And I think that's the catalyst of understanding this entry, is that the high energy and the high beat paired with the almost the adrenaline of seeing Earth from space, I think is a perfect pairing. And I think this entry should have advanced. I think whoever decided not to put this entry through is completely ridiculous. I need to see more about the executive supervisor before I judge them to see if they were as incompetent as Clifford Brown, but that's a story for another time. And yeah, I absolutely love this entry.
Yeah, I mean, I really totally agree with everything you said there. I mean, the 60s and 70s space exploration really had a huge impact on culture, on music, in countless ways that obviously we unpack some of those on our podcast. But, you know, you've got...
Oh, good cross-promotion.
That
well
idea
done.
Of
well
your...
Done.
Your
that's seamless.
Thank you. Yeah, that was seamless. But the idea of you're floating in this rickety ship, you know, floating in a tin can, as David Bowie said in, is it Ground Control to Major Tom? What's that song called?
Sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh, no, that's Life on Mars.
He wrote two. He famously wrote two songs about space in that era.
Little obsessed.
Little bit, yeah, back off, you know, play hard to get, David Bowie.
We get it. You want to go to space.
Space will have you eventually. Yeah. No, I think it's a great entry. I want to redeem Leon in everyone's eyes. I don't know anything about Leon, but Leon, you nailed it.
Maybe a future episode for ESC 101.
Well, you didn't hear the gossip. No, I'm just kidding.
What?
No, go ahead. Share the gossip.
Jack, I can't believe
I don't have any gossip. I was just trying to put Justin on the spot.
I can't believe it. I've never stood by Leon. I don't know this man.
There we go.
All right, Alexander, you now need to Google Leon and see if there's any yep. pending criminal cases and then edit
yes,
Justin
thank
accordingly.
You. Thank you. I've so given you right two alternate takes. So feel free to just use one of the two.
It's like alternate universes. Which one shall I choose?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Or just choose to cancel me by putting the wrong version. Yeah, fantastic.
See, no, I enjoy your work too much. I can't cancel you because your work is too entertaining and too wonderfully engaging.
Okay, well, that's wonderful and also horribly sycophantic, so let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the next entry, which comes from the 2000s. So I'll admit, I found like two entries that even remotely talked about space things, one of which mentioned Galileo, but considering they kept mispronouncing his name, I'm going to go with the alternate entry from Latvia 2003. And thank goodness this isn't Latvia 2002. Otherwise, Jack will go on a rampage and probably have my podcast shut down for crimes against humanity.
I will end you. I will end you if you make me listen to you know what.
I could start having this tune because I know it.
Justin, we'll fill you in later.
But it brought us to Latvia 2008, again, my favorite Eurovision song. So
it all comes back to Latvia eventually, doesn't it?
It does.
So it all comes back to Latvia. So here is the 2003 entry from Latvia entitled Hello from Mars, sung by FLY.
Life is a mystery. Like a perfect harmony. No one knows that day when love will
Wow.
Oh, dear.
I mean,
that got more points than the UK that year.
I love it.
We're
on the same page, right? We love this song.
I will say I enjoyed the stage background because it had like stars and very like galactic colors. Like it felt like I was in like a nebula and it felt very outer spacey. That I did like.
I can't believe they dared to open a line with "Life is a mystery," which is clearly copyright Madonna.
Madonna's just shook.
You can't just say "life is a mystery" as an open. I know it's Everyone a very small part, but I suppose it's just, you know, Madonna's hung up samples ABBA, so it's just bringing, it's the cycle of bringing Eurovision back.
She's getting what she's giving. Gotcha.
She's taken from Eurovision, Eurovision takes from her.
And Madonna was at Eurovision in 2019, oh. So.
She did. Oh my God, let's not talk about it. I love Madonna, let's not talk about it.
You know, I get to do an episode on Madonna because she's an interval act.
Oh, that's right, you do. Jeez, that's a good episode. Oh my God, well done.
Mm-hmm. I can also do an episode on Flo Rida and ABBA and Celine Dion and Katrina and the Waves. And, I can also do the guy that did Sandstorm, Darude, the DJ that did the Sandstorm.
Amazing.
What other famous? I can do Oscar Peterson. Oscar Peterson was an interval act in Eurovision.
I have no idea who that is, but I'm very excited.
A Canadian jazz musician.
Huh.
Yeah, he was the interval act for France in 1978. And I was like, oh.
The French have always been pilfering from the Canadians, haven't they?
Yeah, right. I just did an episode on the Eurovision Travel Guide in France. Check that out to hear my thoughts on the French.
What another good cross promotion.
I mean, I loved that song. I mean, very, very genuinely, I do like the idea behind the lyrics of that song, the idea of let's... You know, it's sort of an alien landing. Is that the premise of the song? An alien is coming down to Earth and saying hello from Mars?
Heaven is coming down from Earth to say hello from Mars, which I think implies that heaven is on Mars. And as we know from Belinda Carlisle, heaven is a place on Earth.
Okay, so let me just read the chorus here, because this is going to be the day that we will meet. When heaven comes so down to earth to say hello from Mars. I love the addition of so as well.
I'm assuming this is correct. Again, I didn't make the lyric sheet. This is from the Diggly Thresh website, which I source pretty much every week. So I'm hoping that this is accurate, but it's like when heaven comes so down to earth.
I mean, so down to earth means when heaven becomes very relatable. I don't think that's quite what they mean.
Yeah, it's Latvia. You know?
Yeah. Well, I saw it at the end, live from Riga. Yeah.
They're hosting the contest after their controversial, at least controversial according to Jack, their win in 2002. Because this is the host entry. Like, this is Latvia's host entry. And I was like, oh, this is like really, this is what they're sending to represent them in the year. I mean, they clearly don't want to win.
That explains the cheering. That's the only reason anyone would have cheered.
This cost us so much money.
It's the only reason why anybody cheered for the song. I am forgetting this because this sounds to me like Andorra 2009, Suzanne Giorgi with the guitar, because that's all I'm thinking of is just that guitar sounding song. And I'm just like, I don't remember the song. Like, I can't even hum it now. I cannot hum Latvia 2003. And also the band name is really weird. The lyrics are wholesome, but like sickly. So costumes, maybe they're like supposed to be future spacesuit designs because it's just like this weird like avant-garde representation of a spacesuit. I don't know. This song, I it's forgettable.
Well, let's not criticize it for what it isn't, which is good, but let's criticize it for what it is, which is a song that dares to talk about what it would be like if, in my mind, alien invaders came down from Mars and they were so down to Earth and they made you cross their blade at some point.
Yeah, that's a weird lyric, isn't it? That's a weird, the blade we must cross or whatever it
the
was.
The blade we all cross, I think we all, that relatable moment when we cross a blade after the alien invaders come down from the heavens. I think it's something that all spacefaring nations have to contend with. And I'm glad that Latvia, the greatest of our, well, by the year 2100 spacefaring nations, I'm glad that they're prepared to grapple with it as a nation and that they chose to do so on their own stage. You know, that's a powerful move. It's a statement. It's not a good statement. It doesn't sound very good. But the concept, I think we need to dream loftier than good music.
That's beautiful, Justin.
And what do you think, Jack?
I think Latvia should have been banned permanently after 2002. So honestly,
even with Wolves of the Sea, even with Love Injected 2015.
Yeah, no, look, I take it back. I do love Latvia. Latvia 2016 is one of my favorites.
I don't remember Latvia 2016. Which one was that one?
Feeling your heartbeat.
Oh, you like
that's
that?
That's all
oh,
I
no,
want.
Jack, no. Why? Oh.
I think I'm in the minority on that one, but I like that one. Yeah, I don't think they, I think you guys are looking for space-themed performance when they didn't even try with space-themed performance. They're just wearing nice white outfits, nice and crisp and clean.
But I mean, they had the galactic background though, and they had literal star. They're like, ooh, twinkly stars.
Yeah, but I think that's where that ended.
Look, Jack, my concern is we can't really complain about people taking a gimmicky approach to discussing space.
Yeah,
because
we
are in the... the most fragile of glass houses here. We have to love the gimmick. We have to get into it.
I actually thought it was a really convincing performance from Latvia. I think they really, really nailed the space theming. Very, very...
one of the best songs ever.
There you go. So let's shift back towards a space-related question. I'd like to get your thoughts on the 2009 contest in Moscow and the 2022 contest in Turin, where astronauts spoke at the contest. So 2009's contest sounded like this.
Traditionally, the signal to the vote is given by a prominent person from a host country, someone like me. But this year, unfortunately, they have decided to give it a really universal scale, so whatever.
And this year, the signal will be given by the crew of the International Space Station, Commander Gennady I. Padalka and Flight Engineer Koichi Wakata.
ISS, do you read me?
Hello, Earth. Dobry vechor, Moskva. Greetings from the International Space Station crew. Being high above the Earth, we are thrilled to be part of Eurovision Song Contest. Especially because we are the only extraterrestrial team represented in the contest. Today, we, space travelers, are going to give orders from the orbit to the Earth rather than taking them. And now we are going to say the historic words of the first cosmonaut, Yuri Gagarin. 3, 2, 1, поехали! Europe! Start voting.
No! La vota,
while 2022's sounded like this.
Are you ready, Torino? 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Stop! Australia, Europe!
Hello Eurovision, ciao Torino. This is the International Space Station calling. I'm Samantha Cristoforetti, and as a European Space Agency astronaut of Italian nationality, I am thrilled that Italy is hosting the Eurovision Song Contest this year when I am up here in space. My crewmates and I wish you a fantastic evening of music and friendship, and we can't wait to discover this year's winner. Ciao.
Thanks to our ESA astronaut, Samantha Cristoforetti. I heard she voted too.
If she did vote, she voted directly from the International Space Station.
And now, as Caesar once said, alea iacta est, the die is cast.
What is it with these people and like quoting, quoting random people?
As Caesar once said, ow, that hurts.
Julius Caesar, Yuri Gagarin, all of these great
people that have influenced the Eurovision Song Contest. 3, 2, 1, start voting now, as Yuri Gagarin so famously said.
I also love that it's an order. Like, no, you have to vote. It's mandatory. Like, we're going to give you an order. Start voting.
Mandatory voting in Eurovision. I want this. This is great.
Yeah, now we are going to give an order to the earth. This is fantastic. Bonus points for the Windows screensaver bouncing around on the computer behind them. I don't know if you picked that up.
Windows XP for the win!
A little bit of a plug for Windows XP. I mean, I really liked the end of Samantha Cristoforetti's segment where she just like mic drops and the mic stays still while she spins off in the background. I think that is... As far as sign-offs go, that is strong.
My favorite bit was that she said, "I'm so excited that Italy is hosting while I'm up on the International Space Station," which is not, "I'm so happy to be part of this." That's, "I'm so glad I got off Earth and as far away as I could be."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. "I'm so glad I wasn't here." That's very specifically, yeah. Very backhanded.
And then she did her awkward twist.
What I thought was really interesting was that the signal in 2009 was really blurry, really kind of, it sounded, you know, and again, this was, I think, was live, or it could have been pre-recorded. I don't actually know. 2022's was crystal clear, and that one was pretty much pre-recorded. I mean, you could tell that that was a properly filmed segment, but it's so fascinating just to see how the signal difference between 2009 and 2022 was like night and day.
And it's amazing that they got an entire film crew up to the ISS in time to film that with her.
Yeah, lighting, cosmetics, yeah, yeah, they did her hair especially.
Just a makeup artist in a space shuttle. Just
no, she's great. So she actually films a lot of videos up there. There's a few educational videos around like what astronauts do on the International Space Station. So it was a bit odd seeing her during that segment because I'm used to her like explaining elements of the space station. She's done a whole lot of YouTube videos.
Yeah, but now she's got an important thing to talk about.
Well, yes, yes. So this is obviously not a gimmick, but all of those other videos are. That's my take.
So after seeing these two segments, do you think that including astronauts in these segments in the contest is a great way to introduce space exploration to a wider audience? Or do you think this is more of a PR gimmick and an afterthought?
I think it's great. It does feel pretty gimmicky though. Like it's like, guess what? Space station. You know, like in 40 years when we've got people living on Mars or whatever, no one's going to be like, right, it's like filming from a public bus today. No one's going to be like, whoa, that dude's on the 279. Oh my God, there he goes. You know, people are going to be like, yeah.
Yeah, but if it was the first bus to like Greenland from Europe.
Well, that's true. Okay, I'll take that. I don't know. I love the second one especially. The first one kind of felt like, look where we can get footage from. Whereas the second one was kind of like, I'm an Italian. This is the European space agency that sent me up here. You know, we are united by music, which I know Alexander is annoyed that that's the slogan. Sorry, go ahead, Justin.
No, I was just going to say that that really is the trajectory in terms of like communications from the ISS as well. In historically, when it first started out, it was look at all the technology we have, look at what astronauts in general can do. As time has moved on and it's less of a gimmick or less of a standout thing to have astronauts being astronauts, and we've kind of got comfortable with seeing videos from space, then it becomes very representational. It's about, I have this connection to this thing on Earth, but I can't be there for it. So this is my way as an astronaut of participating in it. You know, the first one is very, you have the benefit of seeing us. We're going to give orders to you on Earth that you're going to start voting now, you jerks. You better start voting or else.
Yeah.
And then she's very much like, I'm just happy to be able to participate in Earth things while in space. So it's this very reflective, I don't know, that pair of segments together, which obviously very few people will have watched back to back, is actually, I think, more telling than either of them individually.
And it's fascinating because if you know the context of Moscow in 2009, they're hosting the Eurovision Song Contest, and the contest itself is very much a show off of what Russia can really do. I mean, this is years after the Soviet Union has fallen, Russia is proving that they can host an international event like the Eurovision Song Contest. And if I remember correctly, I think they boasted to have the one third of the Earth's LED light bulb.
Third of the LED screens on the entire planet.
Yeah, one third of the planet's LED screens was in that arena at the Eurovision Song Contest. And it's like only would Russia... And in its attitude towards wanting to show itself off. I mean, they did the same thing in Sochi in 2014 with the Winter Olympics. They're very much a people that, and I've seen this even in their Eurovision entries. I mean, their winning entry was with the Stradivarius and the Olympic ice skater. Like they're trying to show the world that they are wealthy and prosperous. And I mean, we're looking at Russia now, which really is a shell of, you know, it's trying to put on this facade of wealth and greatness, but in reality, it's pathetic and tyrannical.
I was going to say, all that goodwill has really lasted through to the current day. That's exactly where we are right now. Everyone's totally happy with Russia at the moment.
And again, this is not towards the common Russian citizen who I'm sure is not happy with Putin's antics. This is towards the Russian government and the generals and, you know, the military people. And the fact that you're literally committing war crimes every day is not a great thing. I would love to have Russia back in the contest as just like a non-governmental entity. But unfortunately, you can't really separate the two. So it's, you know, so that's a little bit of context for the Moscow 2009 contest. As for Italy in 2022, they had a lot of things go wrong in that contest, and I was not pleased with some of either the entries or the stage. So having this segment, I think, helped alleviate some of the negative reaction towards the contest as a whole. I think between that and having Gianola Cinquetti sing her 1964 song on stage, and actually having a recording of her on a Eurovision stage finally for the first time in like decades, because I don't count her hosting in 1991 as singing her song on stage, because that's a whole nother kettle of fish. I think the International Space Station segment in that particular section I think was great, because I'm not familiar with the astronaut, but I think knowing their background now, that I've just heard from you, I think is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so in terms of Russia, we talk about Russia a lot on our show because we are talking about the history of space flight and space travel. It is very, we couldn't just omit Russia and the USSR from our podcast, or we would exclusively be talking about NASA basically for at least up until the 90s and 2000s, when other more than two nations start participating a lot more.
The Canadian Space Agency.
Yeah, you know, you've got one, we've got one now. We were probably the last to get one that should have. But yeah, we, you know, going back through that history, it's really interesting how the history of Russia's relationship with space obviously and naturally mirrors their relationship as a global power. In terms of the Italian entry, I mean, I don't know the context of the rest of the competition, but it feels very grounded, which is obviously ironic because she's in the International Space Station, but it feels very grounded. It feels very personal. And this is something that means a lot to me. This is why we have our show the way we do and why we talk about space in the way we do, is because it allows the intergalactic to become deeply intimate and personal, and we all have a relationship to what is beyond the surly bonds of Earth.
Isn't that what Ronald Reagan said when the Challenger exploded?
Yeah, I think I'm paraphrasing Reagan.
About a spaceship that exploded.
Oh, no.
It's okay. He's allowed to have said four good words in order.
Is Jennifer Coolidge making another appearance to knock off Reagan?
Wow. Yeah, you know, they slipped the surly bonds of Earth and touched the face of God. Wow.
That actually did sound a lot like both Jennifer Coolidge and Reagan. That's really.
I was going to say, that's really skilled.
It's cursed. It kind of sat in the middle there. Yeah. Now say, I'm not a crook.
I am not a crook.
I know that's Nixon.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
That was flawless.
I'll take us out of the United States and back into Europe, and we will react to the next Eurovision entry that I want to get your reaction to, is the 2013 entry from Montenegro entitled Ingreka. I don't speak Montenegrin, so to the people of Montenegro, I apologize. It's translated as party. That should give you an indication of what the song is about. It's sung by Husi, WHOSEE, so like literally the words who see, featuring Nina Žižek. The Zeds have the little like downwards hat, so I believe that's how you pronounce the Žižek.
Downwards hat. I've never heard it described that way, but I love it.
The downwards hat. So here is their entry from 2013.
I famously, and Alexander probably remembers with Eurovision Forever, Liz, former co-host, loved that. And I absolutely despise it. I hate that song.
Oh, you have history with this song.
I don't care for it. I find it so gimmicky and it's just not my style.
I'm sorry. I have to side with Liz on this one.
Does this song convert Justin to a Eurovision superfan? That's the question.
I mean, I like Eurovision. I don't think I'm going to become a super fan because I have one so adjacent to me. So I don't need to, you know, that's just a pool of knowledge. I don't need to double up.
It's true. I carry the weight.
You need to listen to my podcast more. You listen to my podcast, you will become a Eurovision superfan in no time.
Fantastic. Well, I loved that whole performance. I think that's from the bulkiest spacesuits I've ever seen to the cyborg that enters halfway through with her patch over one eye, her like vision augmenting device.
It was like Seven of Nine from Star Trek Voyager has come onto the Eurovision stage.
Yeah, and is just nailing it. I think as someone that grew up in the 2000s and like dubstep is a part of my DNA in a way that it probably isn't for a lot of people. So I genuinely would listen to that again voluntarily.
So trying to ignore the bias from the Eurovision Forever project, Jack, what are your thoughts on this entry and particularly on its meaning?
Putting aside every thought and word and thing that I said about it in 2013, looking at it now, I feel exactly the same way that I did in 2013. I still don't like it at all. it's like that non-musical musicalness. You know what I mean?
2013, the Eurovision Forever project was last 2 years ago.
Sorry, about 2013, not in 2013.
You got me confused there for a second. I was like, I haven't been a fan of yours for that long.
You were very late to the party. Looking at 2013's entry, it's just a bunch of like wobble board noises, you know, and people playing the saw with a violin string. Musically, it does not work for me. But then again, I was very pro tattoo. So, you know, I like my sleek Swedish pop. So, yeah. Yeah, I do like the costumes, though. Costumes, very, very, very good. Very good costumes.
It's like they're wearing spacesuits. Like, it even has little, like, lights on the side.
Yeah.
They even have little Montenegrin flags on their little arms.
Yeah, I think watching the performance did a lot for it. I think just listening to that as a song, I don't know that I would enjoy it anywhere near as much.
If you had to guess as to what the lyrics are about, because I'm assuming you don't speak Montenegrin.
Not currently, but I, you know... Tune back in a month. Yeah, I'll see how my Duolingo is going. And
so what if you had to guess, what do you think the song is about?
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know. It's very punchy. It's very punchy. Like, I think it's about a party on the moon, a party in space. We've already got the clue of party, but it's very aggressive. It's a very serious song. Like, I think that the songs that bring me the most joy are the ones that are extremely silly and everyone is stony-faced the entire time. That just fills me with so much joy. Again, this is why Wolves of the Sea is such like a favorite of mine, because it is, everyone is so like, we're pirates, take us seriously, we're pirates now. And this is doing a similar thing. We're astronauts and we're rapping, as astronauts do. I'm holding up a microphone to the outside of my spacesuit, which would produce zero noise because it's supposed to shield you from like the sun. It's not, you're not going to hear anything with a microphone out the front, but I love it. I love how seriously there, take it.
See, this is what Singer's going to have to wear in 2100. They're going to have to wear these spacesuits.
That's Eurovision, baby.
Can you imagine that the artists are taking this song actually seriously?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like periodically there is like a Eurovision entry in the years that I have seen it. Again, I haven't seen it every year, but in the years I've seen it, there are sometimes people that are like, this is silly, but I know how silly it is, and I'm like above that. And I'm like, you're not above the song you're singing. You're singing this in front of an audience. Believe it, enjoy it. And I will always go for an entry that is people just throwing themselves at it and loving it way more. So I love it. I love it.
I think for me, like I was, so ignoring the title party. So if you didn't know what the title of the song was, but you just watched the performance, for me, it sounds like an entry that's talking about like the battle between humanity and alien life, and how like there's a cyborg queen wanting to invade the Earth and these astronauts are our only hope to save humanity. And they're like rapping to keep the alien at bay. And then the, you know, that's like almost like a weird West Side Story type of like dance battling scene. And then at the end, it's just this what's going to happen next type of thing. But then when you look at the lyrics, it's literally talking about how the world is chaotic and we just need to party all night long because life is kind of not that great. I mean, they had the financial crisis in 2008. I don't remember what else was happening. Oh, San Marino was robbed in 2013. So they're like, they're just upset by that. They're just like, Eurovision has gone to hell. We need to fix this. So let's just party all night long. And not knowing Montenegrin, I would have guessed that this is like some kind of dystopian future that they're trying to portray. And yeah, it's basically just, I don't know, Star Trek on Eurovision, but like not in a great way.
I think the song you just described where there is apparently a rap battle for the Earth with the aliens is a way cooler concept for a Eurovision entry. The idea that it's not two astronauts there, but instead it's an astronaut and an alien and they're like battle rapping. That's close to my heart.
Yeah, see, and I did this before. So I did a previous episode on Croatia and the song of the week I chose was Romanza in 2008. And it's the story of how like old people and elders are still useful in society. But I saw that performance as like a love story gone wrong in the mafia because the dude's just dressed like a mobster. There's like this older gentleman that's like the mob boss and the daughter's all like, I want to be free dancing around the stage and like being all very seductive. And I'm just like, that would have been a fantastic song to put on Eurovision. Instead, it's like, no, old people still have things to contribute to society. And it's like, I don't disagree with that sentiment, but like this song doesn't feel like that. It's just, it's the same thing here in 2013. It's like
that. I mean, yeah, again, you've described something that sounds infinitely better than the thing we just watched. Oh, sorry, the thing we just heard, because the thing we just watched was great. Like, that's the thing. If you just watch this segment, the spacesuits, despite being incredibly impractical and I think more unwieldy than the actual like Apollo mission spacesuits, which are the oldest ones we have, right? Like that was bulky as hell. They just took a large cardboard box and strapped it to their backs. Can we be honest about this? Is that okay?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
Just a giant, giant cardboard box. That said, I wish that more Eurovision entries looked like Halloween costumes that I could make personally.
Final question for the both of you. In the 2009 and 2022 contests, where the contests featured the astronauts during the show, they were connected from the International Space Station, whether broadcasting live or having their segments pre-recorded. As they're orbiting the Earth, and much closer to Earth compared to these hypothetical moon colony, is it possible or easier to watch the contest from the station? And do you think that they're able to actually vote from the space station since they're not physically located in a particular country? So if I'm Italian, for example, and I'm in the International Space Station, I'm not on an Italian cell network, but I am like orbiting the Earth, possibly connecting to cell towers left, right, and center. Like, is it feasible to actually televote from the International Space Station, or do people actually have to be like grounded to like a cell tower network?
I don't see why you would have any issue with voting. I mean, I think in the 2022 entry, they actually suggested she might have voted from the ISS. So I don't see why that would be an obstacle. In terms of easier to watch from the ISS, I mean, we can broadcast footage from the moon and to the moon. The main thing is there are more things to do on the moon when we set up a lunar colony than there are on the ISS, which is famously boring and uncomfortable as a day-to-day experience. Like, we get these windows into that lived experience, into that life.
I mean, is it though? They grew lettuce. They grew lettuce on the International Space Station. That, I think, is pretty cool.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You're thinking of harvesting lettuce when you think about that, not very slowly over the course of many days, the most interesting part of your day is watering a lettuce. And as well, as we previously talked about on our show, there are nastier consequences of prolonged weightlessness. You have permanent loss of bone density. We talked about SANS, which is spaceflight-associated neuroocular syndrome.
Your eyes go crazy.
Your eyes go crazy, yeah, because your gravity is normally what keeps your brain fixed in place. The lack of gravity means your brain moves up in your head and pushes your eyes forward, and it's horrible. It's like the worst kind of nausea you can imagine. And that affects something like 70% of people that are on the ISS.
It doesn't look good either. That's the more important thing. I don't, like, your eyes are all like, oh, that's weird.
Doesn't look good, doesn't sound good. So I would imagine people on the ISS have much more incentive in a closer to completely weightless environment than on the moon, where, as we've established, they can at least be watering the moss and lichen as opposed to a lettuce.
And Jack, any thoughts on the question?
I think if an Italian astronaut is on the ISS and somehow manages to televote for Italy, good for them, you know?
I reckon it should count double.
Well, okay, we can debate that. But consider it's one person in a fun environment. I don't think anyone's going to protest if you televote for yourself.
Because I think that's the thing. It's that you're not allowed to vote for your own country. But what if you don't have a country if you like live on the ISS? Because like I know for like in realism's sake, you still keep your country citizenship unless if you're like Australian. That was really sad, by the way. Like an Australian losing their citizenship to be like in the space program, like that is weird.
Yeah. So that doesn't happen anymore, but that was one of the things that happened with our local boy, Andy Thomas, I believe.
You talked about that in an episode that I listened to not too long ago.
Yeah. So he had to give up his Australian citizenship because at the time you couldn't be a dual citizen with America, or he had to do that and in order to train as an astronaut with NASA, because Australia didn't have a space program, he became a US citizen, renounced his Australian citizenship, and returned to being an Australian citizen in the 2000s at some point. I don't think you now have to do that to go up to the ISS, although maybe you would want to do that because it will allow you to vote for the Australian entry in Eurovision, which I'm sure is a much, you know, more important thing to you than being able to travel to your own country.
Then again, you can just go to Eurovision and televote for your own country. Like, I'm going to be there. I'm going to televote for Australia.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't televote for Australia. That's illegal.
No, I can do it. Breaking the rules. I can do it. If I have a Swedish SIM card, I can do whatever the hell I feel like, except vote for Sweden.
Jack Eaton is openly admitting to breaking the rules of the European Broadcasting Union.
The moral rules, not the technical rules, the moral rules. I'm not in Australia, so I'm not voting for Australia. Of course, if we send Montaigne, I won't be voting anyway. But
I don't have this problem as a Canadian because I get to vote for whatever country I want.
That's right.
And on top of that, we have a Canadian space agency that, as far as I understand, we have Chris Hadfield, we have the Canadarm, I think it's what it's called, which is just a giant arm. Apparently it's on our, like, we have it on our $5 bill. Like, we actually have our space accomplishments on our money, which is like pretty cool.
That's so cool.
You mentioned Chris Hadfield, and obviously a big fan of Chris Hadfield, because he, more than I think anyone, has done like all of that public awareness of what people are doing on the International Space Station was really led by him. He famously played a couple of Bowie songs on his guitar on the ISS, which is great. It's always nice to have the guy at a party who's like, anyway, here's Wonderwall, but in space. We needed that for space communication. So big, big, big fan of Chris Hadfield. I feel like it took too long to have someone sort of relatable or as just like a friendly public face of space in the way that he has been. So, yeah, nothing but props for the guy.
Do you two have any other final comments on anything that we've seen today or any other Eurovision-related topics?
I think we have today come up with a really, really, really strong way to get the moon involved in Eurovision and televoting from the ISS. I think we've laid the groundwork here. We just need someone wealthier and probably a bit more techie than us to do the rest. But I think one day we will cross from Eurovision to the moon. Absolutely. Whether they're in it or not, might take a little longer, might be beyond my natural expectancy, though I plan on living forever.
Are you volunteering?
To live forever? Yeah, I'll live forever.
To organize Eurovision on the moon?
Absolutely not. No. I famously have ADHD, so that is not going to work for me. Justin?
Oh, yeah. No, I'll definitely. Yeah, guys. Well, this Eurovision thing sounds really cool. And I'm really a fan of this whole idea of like a song contest. What a cool idea. And maybe if we move that to the moon, even better, right? I'm a big fan. I think the giant spinning cone is going to require a lot of effort, so we'd better get started on it soon if we're going to have the Waterlooner base in Space Liverpool the best Eurovision host we've had so far.
And one day, maybe, we'll all see you at the Waterlooner Space Arena. Waterlooner, I was defeated, you won the war. Waterlooner, you know where I'm going.
And you've definitely won the war on who is the bigger Eurovision fan, because I think we've introduced Justin to a few Eurovision entries, and I think, you know, you made a comment in the Q&A where it's like, Eurovision's going to slowly colonize the podcast and slowly colonize the rest of the world, and I think this is a continuation of that, so I appreciate your indulgence. I appreciate your experience and wisdom on both space exploration and, of course, the Eurovision Song Contest, how we can showcase entries that talk about virtually any topic that includes outer space and space theme related stuff. And so to close, I would like to give you two the floor to talk about all the wonderful things that you're doing over at the PEAS Inner Network. So please tell our listeners all about the PEAS Inner Network and all of the great shows that you have over there.
Fantastic. Well, you can check out the shows on the PEAS Inner Network at peasinner.com.au. That's PZINNER. We have a whole bunch of great shows. I co-founded the network with my friend Kieran, who also has been on Mates in Space a couple of times. He was the voice of, he read some poetry for us in the episodes on animals in space. And so, yeah, good fellow. We have a whole bunch of exciting podcasts for you to check out. And we're all very independent and low budget, but crushing it, obviously, as you are here on ASA 101.
And you wouldn't be able to tell the low budget, because as someone who listens to the PEAS Inner Network on a regular basis, it is high quality content with some really dedicated and fantastic people. I've got to say, in all honesty, it's one of the especially the only podcast network that I'm familiar with. So, I mean, that I don't know, I can't really compare it to other podcast networks, but it is one that has high quality, high listenability. I mean, I put it on running for hours, sometimes running in the background. Sometimes I'm listening to it deeply. I mean, between Mates in Space, there's Best Left Forgotten. There's Please Attend Carefully. There's even some other secret episodes that kind of live in the ether that kind of sit in a little archive that I kind of listen to back on repeat, which I think you should probably revive because I want more.
We will. Well, we've got new episodes of a couple of shows coming out soon and new people joining the network all the time. So, I mean, huge props. I can't take any credit for the suite of amazing shows. We have just such a great pool of talented creators that
I'll take credit for it. It was me.
Yeah, I'm happy to be adjacent to them and give Jack all the credit for it. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, if you'd like to check out those shows and or get involved in the network, again, that is pzinner.com.au, and you can find us at pzinnerco on various social media platforms. Yeah, I'm really happy with what we have, our little baby indie darling network, and I hope if you like what we have been talking about here. Obviously, the way to find us is at Mates in Space on various social platforms and wherever you get podcasts.
I will say the average Mates episode has slightly less Eurovision, but I do mean slightly less Eurovision.
Very slightly. Very slightly.
It does lean a little bit more on the space side.
Yeah.
Compared to this episode, there is just a teensy, teensy little bit. You might notice it from time to time.
Especially compared to this podcast.
I'm sorry. I am working on it. I am getting better. And moving the show steadily away from space and towards more Eurovision stuff.
Jack, do you have anything you'd like to promote?
I do. I would like to promote world peace, and I would like to promote my new charity, which gives money to me. And you can find
sign
it.
Sign me up.
Yeah, okay, cool. I'll give you my bank details. I'll just put my bank details on the net and you guys can do that. So, you know, if you want to support a good charity that just funds my lavish lifestyle of FIFA and Golden Girls reruns, donate.
And of course, you're working on a secret project that I assume you're still keeping under wraps in the meantime.
Very, very, very soon, my friends. Very, very, very soon. And very more Eurovision. Very more Eurovision. I'll let you know.
It's exciting. Very exciting. Thank you again to Jack Eaton and Justin MacArthur of Mates in Space, a P Zinner podcast. I will be leaving links and cross promotions all across the social network so you'll know exactly where to find these two if you want to listen to their back catalog of episodes on Mates in Space and, of course, the other shows on the P Zinner network, which I cannot recommend any more than I already do. Thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for enlightening the listeners on space exploration and having Eurovision in space and all these wonderful things. And I hope to chat with you again soon.
It was so lovely to be here. I loved it. I loved every second of it.
Thanks so much for having us.
Of course, a huge thank you to Jack Eaton and Justin MacArthur of Mates in Space, a P Zinner podcast. The P Zinner network is home to so many wonderful shows, and I honestly can't recommend them enough. Links to both the podcast and the P Zinner network is going to be either in the description or on our social media. Check us out on Instagram at ESC101podcast and check out the show notes on our website, ESC101podcast.wordpress.com. Next week's episode is right on schedule to revisit the Eurovision yearbook, so stay tuned. You have been listening to ESC 101 with Mates in Space. See you next time.